Welcome to Supercharge, the Change and Comms podcast. I'm Chris Bradley, and I'm here as usual with our co-host, Pete Hodges. In this episode, we're chatting with Monica Kalinescu. Monica is the Member Engagement Lead at the Change Management Institute. So we're going to find out a bit more about that, but also how Monica switched from engineering to change. Before that, though, as usual, let's head to Barcelona and say hi to Pete.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing? Nice to see you both again.
This is when you need to put the sound effects in, Pete. You know, you bought them, I think. Pretend we're in front of a live studio audience.
There is a button on here that says media with sound effects, but I dare not press it yet. One day I'm going to try it.
One day we'll pilot it. Okay, cool.
I really wanted to try these features in Riverside because I use it as well for recording podcasts. And I'm like, I want to press that.
Should we try it?
Try it.
Okay, here we go.
That went well.
Feel like I need a joke now.
Well, we didn't hear it, so maybe it'll come out in the recording. We'll find out.
You didn't hear it?
No.
Oh, okay.
What one did you pick?
Let me try that again.
That worked.
There you go.
Can you imagine the people that could be driving up the M5 to work listening to this and going, what are they? Oh, there it is! I hope there's like general amusement now amongst cars anyway. Monica, how are you doing?
Good. Listen, guys, I'm so excited to be here. It's literally the first podcast I've ever done as a guest,
this
so
is
I'm
be
so
cool.
excited.
We'll give you the chance to talk about your podcast a bit later because I was looking it up earlier and it's quite an interesting but very important topic too. So we'll hit upon that in a bit.
Thank you.
Why don't you just kick off telling us a little bit about yourself, what you're up to at the moment?
Yeah, of course. Should I read my LinkedIn bio, guys?
Ah.
No, I'm joking.
Imagine not having LinkedIn. How would you ever get a job?
I know, right? I think people used to look at jobs in newspapers back in the day, but I don't know about that. But yeah, sure. My name is Monica Kalinescu. I'm originally from Romania, as you can tell from my accent and my surname as well. I work in Change, which is pretty cool. And I've got a pretty cool job title as well, Change Enabler. What do? I enable change. And I'm really passionate about making a positive impact through my work. I would describe myself as a creative person, and I love bringing that into what I do and my style of working as well. And something that you might not know about me, guys, I do a little bit of content creation on TikTok and Instagram as well, which I started at the beginning of this year, which is something that allows me to express my creative side. And I think it sort of pushed me to learn more about what people like, you know, like what makes them tick, and also how humor could play such an important role in bringing people together and connecting with them and building that community, which to me is quite a transferable skill and something that I tend to apply in work settings, you know, like change projects as well. But I'm not stopping there. I love being busy. So I started volunteering with the Change Management Institute back in June this year. And I'm the member engagement lead. So again, my focus is on social media stuff and developing communication and engagement strategies to build the institute's social media and online presence, I guess. And I'm also a podcaster. So I've launched my very own podcast in June this year. Lots of things happened in June this year. It's called Real and Unapologetic, and it's all about shedding light on mental health in the workplace and talking about those taboo things that, you know, tend to get, you know, swept under the office rug.
I think it's such a cool name. I think it's such a great name for a podcast. I think ours was cool, but yours is really cool.
Thank you. I'm all about authenticity, and I want to bring people on the journey and to let them talk openly about these things and be the most authentic version of themselves. So I thought, real and unapologetic, why not?
I think that's great. And I think, you know, the authenticity thing is really important. And for those who are listening whilst probably driving up the M5 on their way to work, you can't be more authentic than Pete, who is sat under the stairs recording a podcast. That's as authentic as these things get.
Thanks. I knew I wouldn't be able to get away with this forever. I literally am in a cupboard. So Chris is going to insist on posting a picture of this one, I think.
Don't worry, it's going to get on LinkedIn.
You have to eventually. So we were keen to get into the Change Management Institute a bit because it's not something we've really talked about before. So could you explain, what is it? What does it do? Why should people have a look at what they offer?
Yeah, of course. Well, Change Management Institute for me is the best thing that ever happened.
That's quite a big thing.
Yeah. is, well, it's a global independent nonprofit association for change professionals. But in simpler words, it's an amazing place for change professionals, for professionals who are passionate about guiding people and organizations to change, essentially. They have about 35 member countries, so you can, you get a chance to connect with so many people across the world, which is so cool. If you sign up as a member, you get access to a lot of resources for learning and networking and, you know, professional development as well. I was absolutely blown away, guys, when I joined the Institute. About, you know, I was really blown away by how vibrant this community is and how...
When did you join?
Back in May 2020, so when I started my role in Change, when I first got my job title that had changed in it. And I really wanted to learn more about it and equip myself with the skills and knowledge that I need to just hit the ground running and make this a success. So I knew about the Association of Project Management, but I wanted to learn about an institute about change management. So I Googled it and I found it, and it was the best thing, honestly. It's essentially like this place, they run so many events as well where you get to connect with people, and they're all about like pretty much any topic that you could think of. You know, it's all about like how to make comms land, how you can celebrate success, you know, in change, psychological well-being, different approaches, you know, change complexity in digital transformation, you name it, like it's there. And they're also recorded so you can watch back if you're not able to join there live. But there's also networking sessions, events where you can meet with people in person and also online as well. And actually, I remember when I first joined as a member, they were doing this change chat, like an online networking event for people in the Southwest, I think, to just network with each other and get to know each other. And I remember I was so nervous to join because here I was, you know, little me with no experience in change. And I knew there's going to be lots of change professionals with years and years of experience. And I was really, really nervous. But as soon as I joined, I was welcomed by, you know, the UK country lead, and they were all so nice. Everyone wanted to ask me questions and learn a bit more about what I do. And then I asked them questions about what they're doing and got to connect with them on LinkedIn later. And, you know, we were friends now. And it's just so, so cool. I think it's such an amazing place to meet like-minded people and learn from them as well.
How did you go from joining to the role that you've got now and acting as an advocate?
Well, so I joined as a member, and I was so, like I said, blown away by the resources available, because it's something that you can just download and read in your spare time, but you can also share with people in your organization, in your team as well, which is really, really cool. So I started joining different events, some of them in person as well, which, you know, is, I absolutely love the fact that we can meet online. And it's great that, you know, as soon as you finish work, you can join a meeting and you can get to chat with people. But there's something about meeting people in person, isn't it? It's a bit easier to connect with them. And I asked someone, oh, is there a possibility for me to volunteer? Because I know I don't have a lot of experience, but I think I do have certain skills that I can bring to the table. And one of the things I wanted to do is dive a little bit more in content creation, which is what I started this year. And I thought I could help with this, and I could help with making the Institute stand out on social media, because that's where we get most of our information these days, isn't it? And I just felt like this is such a vibrant and amazing community, and I really wanted to help them make it translate on social media that it is amazing and people should be joining. So I had a chat with one of the Southwest core chapter leads, and she introduced me to the country lead, and it's history now. I started volunteering with them in June this year. We've been working on a LinkedIn campaign to put our volunteers on the spotlight and get them to share their experiences, because as you know, people don't really connect with logos and brands and companies, they connect with people. So I really wanted to create a campaign where people could see, you are, you know, the volunteers behind the Change Management Institute and what they've actually gained from volunteering with the Institute. So that's gone down really well. And we've got so many plans ahead for next year as well to increase that online presence for the Institute.
Was it something they were doing before, or are these changes that you've introduced?
Well, they already had like campaigns that they were running on LinkedIn and on social media, but I don't think they were at that level as in introducing the human side, you know, the volunteers, the members. And I think it's really important. Like I said, I do content creation on TikTok, and I'm not sure if you guys are on TikTok as well, but there's this thing.
Chris looks at it. I think.
I think it used to be only like TikTok dances at the beginning, but now I think it's sort of evolved into this space where people are more authentic and they start talking about, you know, a day in a life of a change manager, a day in a life, you know, of a project manager, and they talk about what they do and they take people on the journey. And we've seen so many people getting hooked into these things and paying attention to this kind of videos and connecting with people and creating communities. So I thought, well, these are the same people that watch things on TikTok. They might enjoy watching this on LinkedIn as well. And yeah, we didn't really have a campaign like this with videos from people. It was something that we've introduced recently, but I think it landed really well. We had lots of interest from across the world, even though we started with volunteers from the UK. We had lots of people that were interested in joining the Institute and becoming volunteers as well.
Yeah, I think when you get stuck in a contract for, let's say stuck, that's the wrong word, but when you're enjoying a contract for a long period of time, you can forget what goes on in the outside world. So actually source resources like the Change Management Institute and others are, you know, really valuable in keeping in touch with what the insights and trends and you know, other people's experiences are. So,
and it's really good. Like we have like WhatsApp groups as well for each of the regions, like where people are based. And something that I find really, really cool is when, you know, like someone drops a message to say, has anyone done, you know, an ERP transformation, or has anyone worked on Workday before? And then someone would just go, oh, yes, I can share with you some learnings. And then someone else jumps in and says, oh, I work on this as well. Can I have a chat with you? And it's just so, so good for that, to just create like networks of people that work on the same project.
I think we need a topic on that one alone, actually. I think that's going to be a really good conversation. We'll pencil that in for season 3, because there's the whole level of fear factor in sharing as well, isn't there? So let's pencil that one in, Pete. I think we can explore, you know, working in big networks. I think that's something to do.
That would be really cool. And we're also going to be doing a podcast as well next year with the Change Management Institute. So maybe we can do a collaboration
I'd
together.
Like that. We'll be members really cool. By then, right? So it's all good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, Monica, the interesting thing is, like, you know, I've worked in utilities, in finance, higher education at the moment. I'm in a government organization, so I've moved around as well. But your switch is somewhat more dramatic, isn't it? I mean, moving from engineering to change is quite a step. What's the story there?
Yeah. To be honest, I get that all the time, Chris. Lots of people, they're asking me, oh, so you studied mechanical engineering. What made you go into change? I don't get it. I don't think I chose a career in change management. I think I just stumbled upon it, to be honest. Like as a kid, I didn't really picture myself saying, oh, I want to be a change enabler, or I want to be a change manager. No, not really.
Does anybody?
Has anyone else thought, oh, I want to be a project manager or a change manager? I don't think so.
And it's a strange path we end up on, isn't it? I like the saying, you know, I didn't choose change management chose me.
Yes.
I'm never sure how I ended up in the same path. So it's something that all three of us have got in common.
Yeah. But I think I've always had this creative side of me, which I expressed through photography back when I was living in Romania. But I was also drawn to, you know, like the science and maths as well, which is why I went to study mechanical engineering in the UK. And I really, really enjoyed my studies and my degree, but I wasn't really like deeply passionate about, you know, the typical work of an engineer. You know, I was looking, you know, around my peers and my colleagues, and they were all into like engineering design and 3D modeling and machines and engines and cars and all of that. And for me, like, I was just passionate about maths, and, you know, what was bringing me joy was like solving a math problem and realizing that there's more than one way to tackle a question. That was what excited me. It wasn't really like, oh, I want to, you know, like come up with this 3D model for a car or something. So when I was in my third year at uni, I was introduced to PRINCE2 project management in one of my courses. And it was a bit intriguing, but I still wasn't really sure about where I want to take my career in terms of a direction. But I knew that I wanted to do something important, something big, something that could make, you know, a real difference. It sounds a bit dramatic in the world, but, you know, in an organization. And later on, so I was working in an engineering company, which I really, really enjoyed, but it was more in that project management capacity. And then I went to work in the construction industry and started working as a project coordinator on a finance project, which was really cool. And then I moved to a startup in Bristol as a project engineer. But it was never the technical aspect that I loved, though. What was really drawing me is working with people, the human element, understanding that human side of things. And I think without realizing, I was more and more inching towards change management, because I was always curious about how changes were communicated and if people were on board, how it's actually impacting them. Is anyone thinking about that? Or are we all about, you know, timelines and, you know, like budgets and all of that? And I was contacted by someone on LinkedIn about this change enabler role, and it seemed to fit my interest in IT as well, because I was still wondering, what industry do I want to work in? Should I stay in engineering? Should I not? And when I heard about change management and in IT, I thought, that sounds pretty cool. I would love to be part of that, especially when it comes to digitalization in an industry that I think I've mentioned at the beginning to you guys is like probably one of the least digitized industries, you know, construction.
I'm going to have a look. I've never thought to look in construction as an industry to move into. Would you recommend it, Monica?
I think it's a really good place to start if you're up for the challenge. It's definitely a lot of change that goes in there at the moment. I think it's really exciting. I know some people might think, oh, it's just like rocks and quarrying and cement and concrete, but it's actually more than that. And there's a lot more job opportunities than people might think. You know, you can work in IT, you can work in digitalization, you can work in finance, you can work on sustainability. Like, there's so many functions that you can join and work in. Is not just operations necessarily.
What are some of the challenges that you think are unique to construction, or, you know, what are the big changes happening in that at the moment?
I think there's lots of changes that are happening at the moment, one of them being digitalization. I think the construction sector is very much set in its ways. When I joined about, I think it was 4 years ago or a little bit over 4 years ago, the first thing that I've ever heard when I started as a grad, someone said to me, I don't want to change this. Like, don't come in fresh out of uni trying to tell me, you know, I've worked here for 20 years and things are fine. Why should I change it if it's not broke? So I thought to myself, well, why would you not want to try something new that might help you? And I think people are slowly starting to become a bit more open to change now, but there's always going to be this element of, I don't want to change. You know, I used to do things with pen and paper. Are you telling me now there's this AI thing that is coming over?
AI in construction. How does that work? I need to know more. How does AI embed itself in construction?
I need an AI buzzer.
Well, press it, big.
AI buzzer's gone off. I'm not sure that's quite the right one.
I can't tell you how big my smile is. If you're, if, if you're listening to this again, driving up the M5 on your way to work or home from wherever, I can tell you the smile on my face getting a round of applause for bringing in AI is high. Go on, Monica, give us a 30-second praise here. How does AI fit in the construction industry? Because that is interesting, I think.
AI in the construction industry, digitalization AI is an enabler in the construction industry to help us achieve our sustainability goals. It's still early days, I think, but a lot of people, and especially in my team, have started adopting what we know as, I think this is another buzzword, guys, ChatGPT,
yeah.
And other AI tools, which is really good. Like I use ChatGPT on a daily basis, and I've started to learn more about prompting and how we can use these things to be a little bit more productive and efficient. Like, why should I spend, you know, a day worth of work trying to do something when I can do it in 1 hour using AI? I think it's a no-brainer. And I've seen a lot more people now open to trying it. I think at the beginning, everyone was a bit like, oh, I don't know about that. It's not secure. Like, is it going to take over the world? I don't know. And now we have lots of people in the company that are championing this and in the industry. And I think it becomes a bit more, oh, I want to know what is all about this. Like, oh, you're using it. Can you show me how to use it? And now we've got people in different functions, you know, corporate functions that are starting to see the benefit of using tools like ChatGPT or looking into how AI can support us in different contexts, like, you know, whether it's in operations or whether it's in the contact center or somewhere else. I think there's plenty of opportunities to make life easier for people. I think it shouldn't be just about, oh, we're going to be more productive and save money and do all of this. I think it should be about job satisfaction as well. How can we make this better for people so we eliminate that admin, you know, boring side of the role, and we give them the freedom to focus on more creative stuff.
I don't know about you, but I find when I use AI quite often, it's more for inspiration, and I'll still change what it's written. And I still stand by that anybody that's ever tried to get something approved by a committee of people, the AI is just like adding an extra person into that, and it doesn't actually help getting a decision made.
Now, I've used it to reword a few sentences every now and again if I'm just really struggling for the inspiration, or someone has written something so complicated in terms of they're switching between the tenses, or, you know, they're just using words which just seem like they're just trying to extend a sentence for an unnecessary purpose. And then AI will chuck something back at me, and I'm going, no, it was better before. I kind of feel like I've just wasted 10 minutes trying to get a better sentence out of something, which I probably was just being lazy and should have done myself and ended up having to do anyway. So there is a time and a place for these things. And I do worry that I have somehow in the last couple of months contributed towards making ChatGPT dumber. But
I'm pretty sure you did it, Chris. Don't worry. I think it's all about the prompts as well that you use to make it sound a bit more like you. But I completely agree. I think ChatGPT is really, really good to help people brainstorm ideas, but not for decision making.
That's right. You're right. It doesn't provide the context. And like a lot of different industries, whether that's science or whether it's what we do, you can get an AI tool to draft you out of comms. But if it doesn't sound like the person where it's coming from, it's lost the authenticity. And if it sounds like the last four or five comms have gone out, then actually, do you know what? It's not added any value at all. So the context piece, I agree, is important.
So something I found is helpful is, so something obviously we have to do quite often is provide sponsors or leaders with that messaging that goes out around change. And if you can give an AI like Copilot or GPT enough context, then it can do write an email in the tone of this person. Here's a load of other emails they've sent before. Whether or not, you know, maybe it's not actually them that's sending it, and perhaps I've created an entire identity that doesn't exist, but I found it quite good for that.
Pete's created a whole new exec member.
In reality, they don't know what they're saying at all.
The credibility of that person's probably super high.
Yeah, I think it's really good for creating personas. Not personas, but I think it can help you. If you give it enough context and enough information, it can definitely come up with some pretty cool things. And it's quite good to have this running joke with my manager. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just talking to my personal assistant, ChatGPT, to come up with something. But obviously, I'm not taking it as it is and then just put it in a presentation. I still want it to sound like me. I don't want to sound like a robot.
No, that's interesting as well, isn't it? Because Monica, if I look through your LinkedIn, you're quite prominent on there. You share a lot of posts and what have you. Have you become quite astute at spotting the AI drafted material that ends up on there? Because I can see it now a lot clearer than I ever had, but it's having to cut through the noise. Because I think a lot of LinkedIn is being used by the AI bots to promote certain things. My favorite marketeers are appearing daily. I don't think they're real people anymore. And aside from the people who are very proud to announce something, you know, what's left in there is the useful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've got AI influencers now. I'm not sure if you've seen on Instagram.
I saw this, actually. I saw a post, and it was really quite interesting because someone was saying that they were trying to complete a certain number of posts per day to earn some kind of badge or award that confirmed them as a LinkedIn influencer. And I think their conclusion, I won't spoil it, but I can't remember who did it. If I can find it, I'll share the post via the page. But their conclusion was it was a lot more effort than it was probably worth. And it actually made them feel less good about what they were doing because the stuff that they ended up posting was getting some trolling.
It's not great if you just copy and paste what ChatGPT generated and you're not adding your own twist.
Yeah, I think I put a post on one of Pitlink's topics, didn't I? But strategic typos are needed now to demonstrate our worth. Whereas we spent probably the first 20 years of our careers trying to make sure we were word perfect and the grammar, avoiding the grammar police, and then suddenly I'm now thinking I need to drop a few in there so it does actually look like I've done it.
Chris Bardley.
That's amazing, isn't it? Monica, before we wrap up, just tell us a bit about your podcast then, because as you said, started off at the beginning of the show, great title, but also important topic.
I started this podcast I launched my very first episode in June this year, but for me, it was something that I started thinking about, I think, a couple of years ago, and it started with something that I was struggling on my own with my mental health. And when I joined the industry, I think especially in STEM, there is this stigma around mental health. Because it's a very traditionally male-dominated industry, people tend to mask a lot and not talk about how they're feeling. And I just feel like myself, I found myself really consumed by trying to pretend that I'm okay and trying to mask. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel like the most productive meetings that you have are more informal, where people feel comfortable to just be themselves. And I kept wondering, like, why are we not allowing this? Why are we just saying, oh, if you're a professional person, then you should just put a smile on your face and try to pretend that you've got no problems and there's no life shit going on in your life, you know? Like, I think we should be a bit more honest and talk about things. And I've noticed with my content as well, so on TikTok I post about like corporate humor, work humor, and I talk about imposter syndrome and some other mental health things as well. And when I posted a video about imposter syndrome, I had lots of people reaching out to me, people who are doing PhD degrees or people who are quite senior in their positions at work, reaching out to me to say, I feel like this every single day. I struggle with imposter syndrome every single day. And I'm wondering, I would have never guessed that a person like this is struggling with that. But the fact that you say that you are facing this or you are struggling with that, I think it opens the conversation and it allows other people to feel comfortable to talk about it.
One of the things I saw this morning was a video that Heather Murray had posted about digital twins. And I was just thinking, do AI people worry about their imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
Sorry. I've completely wrecked your train of thought, but yeah.
No. I've seen that one as well. I love Heather. She's absolutely amazing when it comes to AI things.
What have you got planned though? What have you got coming up?
I still have 3 episodes left to release from season 1. So far, we've had lots of things about mental health and mental health disorders as well. Talk about bipolar, talk about imposter syndrome, toxic managers, work-life balance, boundaries, stuff like that. But I still have 3 episodes left to release. One of them is about working as a woman in a male-dominated industry, particularly construction. The other one is about toxic masculinity in the workplace and mental health. And the other one is about being an immigrant and how that can have an impact on your mental health and potentially on your career as well.
Yeah.
Well, you live in Barcelona, Pete.
Well, same thing, right?
An important question, of course. And it doesn't have to be a British biscuit, Monica. But what is your favourite biscuit for a hot drink? You can pick one from Romania if there's like a hunkering you have for one.
It's always the one that throws.
We ask everybody. God. It's a massively important part. We never tell you in advance, but you know.
I know, but I did listen to your episodes, particularly the one with John Hawker.
Oh, he's good, isn't he, John?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew this was coming, but I forgot to think about it in advance. Okay, I don't know if I can pick a specific brand, guys, but I love anything that has chocolate. So I think I'm just going to go with chocolate digestives.
I agree. That's a great choice. In fact, I yesterday, whilst leg up on the sofa, my daughter kindly ran up to the co-op. I said, bring back something chocolatey. Chocolate digestives.
Milk chocolate or dark chocolate.
Love it.
No, milk.
Milk chocolate, of course.
Milk chocolate. Yeah. I'm not sure about dark chocolate digestives. I don't know whether that's kind
of... It's like the healthy option, isn't maybe, it?
Yeah, I think you kind of... You progress into that when you get older.
You need to lower it.
It's like bran flakes.
I have to pick the milk chocolate one.
Absolutely.
The sweeter, the better.
Monica, it's been great to have you on the show. We're going to do season 3 next year, and I've got a funny feeling we're going to need to have you back for that.
Definitely.
Thank you so much for having me.